Well, welcome to the Word for Life radio broadcast. We're excited to have you join us this morning. At the table with me is my co-host, Dr. Les Olala, Chancellor of Northern Baptist Bible College. Good morning, Doc.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing well. I'm having a good day today, I think.
Well, it's early. I'm still above ground, and at my age, that's a plus any day.
Great. Well, we're going to be talking today about what we talked about last time we were together. I want to pick that theme up, your life is a vapor. And you gave us some great insight into the concept of needing to number our days and applying our hearts to wisdom so that our life can have that fullness and that abundance that God intended for us to have. And I know that you're excited this morning to talk about the Bible character that we're going to be visiting over, and certainly somebody in the Old Testament who did exactly what we're talking about, who numbered his days and who applied his heart to wisdom. But certainly he didn't start with all of that, and so this morning we're going to look at Joseph, and I wonder if you could maybe kind of jump in and just talk about how Joseph made his life count, made the vapor count.
Well, in Genesis 37, there's a very interesting phrase. And it says, and Joseph dreamed a dream. When you look at the whole concept of dreaming a dream, is it enough to dream? And when you look at the whole background of Joseph here, and I don't often preach on a motto or a tiny phrase, but this is one phrase that jumped at me when I was reading through this. And Joseph dreamed a dream. And I underscored that. In fact, I put a message together for a commencement address on that phrase. What is your dream? Is it enough to dream? And then is your dream something that is going to go beyond time into eternity? And I was reminded of that. Those of you who follow hockey will remember the Travis Waugh story. It was called the 11-second dream. And Travis Waugh, from his childhood, had a life goal to play for Boston University. His father coached him through youth hockey, went all the way into high school, went into junior hockey from there. Then finally, he was picked up by Boston University, and his dream became a reality. He got to start for Boston University. Wow. And he went out on the ice 11 seconds into his first shift on the ice. He went into the boards. Didn't seem like an unreasonable hit. In fact, I think he was going into somebody else, and he slumped to the ice. And his father ran out, and with the medical people wondering, and his father was kidding him, said, son, get up, there's a game to play, as he had before, kind of teasing, and then he said, Dad, I'm in trouble, I can't move. Hmm. The second thing he said, Dad, I made it. His dream lasted 11 seconds. You'll see Travis Waugh now on bench. When NHL gets back, you'll see him on the bench in games where his buddies are playing, and he is a friend. But yet, he will never leave that wheelchair. And he says, sometimes I fall asleep and I dream, I'm going down, I am getting ready to take a slap shot and I wake up. And he said, reality stinks. Because I know I'll never again play the game. Obviously, we want our dreams to go beyond that. What Joseph had was a dream that was not only for then. It was a dream that was going to go into eternity. We see the eternal blessings of that life that Joseph lived.
You know, I think that's so crucial because I can relate to what you were just talking about. You know, sometimes we have these dreams that we start out with as kids, and our life is going to unfold in a certain way. And sometimes as parents, we have dreams for our children that we want them to accomplish more than we accomplished. I'm sure many of our listeners this morning will reflect back to their high school graduation and thinking about the dream that lay before them. And now here we are. You use the illustration of the yardstick, which is powerful. You know, most of us are into the fourth segment of that yardstick, and we've spent more of the yardstick, snapped off more pieces of the yardstick than there are left. So here we are in the middle of the reality now. And like you said, for some of us, reality may stink. How do we take the reality that we have and live the dream that God may have to have? Sometimes it may require the death of an old dream so that God can bring about his dream for our life.
Yeah, I think we all, as we grow, we become more realistic about what is there. The dream that Joseph had was certainly unique because it was a God-given revelation to Joseph of what was coming for him. With his brothers, it did not go over real big. And I said, if Joseph ever made a mistake, And they say Daniel and Joseph have nothing on record as having done wrong. If he made any mistake as a leader, and that was prematurely sharing a dream, those of you who are leaders, you better know you have God's timing in sharing what you believe God has for that work or ministry in the days ahead, because you may scare the fire out of your staff.
I've often laughed at that because, you know, here's Joseph, and he's all excited that his brothers are going to bow down to him. And so when bowing practice came along, they didn't respond very well. You're exactly right about that.
No, but the interesting thing also is that with his dad, the second dream, that the stars would bow, even mom and dad. And the dad said, are you saying that even we will bow? So Joseph's dream obviously was indicating the fact that he was going to become a very strong, potentially world leader. And had to be there for a parent to bow in that culture indicated that he was going to be in a very, very high position.
And this is even before it happened. I mean, probably
it was
decades before.
He was 17 years old.
Wow.
I mean, can God use a teen? I preach the message to teens, how God used the teens from a dysfunctional family. We hear a lot about dysfunctional homes. Well, if Jacob's family was not dysfunctional, I would like to know what family was. And so there is hope from dysfunctional homes. You know, Joseph was 17 years old at this point.
It might be worth just taking a minute here because some of our listeners may not be aware of Jacob's life and how it affected Joseph. I mean, you know, we kind of laugh about Joseph coming from a dysfunctional family, but really the Bible record really does depict that. What can you just give us a few ideas of what that home was like that he came out of?
Well, a hint was his brother sold him. I mean, that certainly isn't normal. I mean, how would you like to go to camp when your teen come home and all your belongings are in the front yard and your brothers are laughing, say, while you were gone, we sold you to Cuba. And then when you look in the history of the favoritism, Jacob's name was supplanter, and he met his match with Laban. And then you find how the manipulation was going on and all of the wickedness of the brothers. It just shows the grace of God at work in the life. But here he picked his 17-year-old boy and gave him a dream. But the question is, how does the dream become a reality? It is not just enough that he dreamed. The question is, you know, where do we go from there with that?
And sometimes that dream can be derailed so easily. And we'll talk about in future shows some of the Bible characters who didn't live out their dream. What did God do to prepare Joseph for this great worldwide position of influence? Because I'm sure that there were moments where that could have easily gone a different direction if Joseph hadn't really responded properly. What kind of things did God do to get him ready?
Well, I think when you see the first major thing that Joseph faced as a 17-year-old boy, at the peak of his physical drive, in a very negative situation, Joseph was confronted with the most unbelievable temptation in that setting, after he had gotten to Egypt as a slave. And the thing we see, Joseph had a conviction before he faced a crisis. That was basic in his life. But then you think, well, how did he have that conviction? He was only 17 years old. How did he have that? Well, you see, Joseph overcame many temptations before he ever faced that woman down there in Egypt. And the first thing, he overcame the temptation to conform to the wickedness of his brothers. He had to make that decision personally. His brothers were very wicked. It says very clearly in Genesis chapter 37. Oh, these were wicked brothers. And so he didn't conform to them. He didn't conceal their evil. A lot of times in our years of working with teens, you'd often hear and say, I'm not ratting on anybody. Well, if you genuinely love someone who you see destroying himself, you are going to go to someone who can get help.
That's right.
And Joseph was not afraid. He went to Dad and said, Dad, the boys are doing this. Joseph was not telling on them to show how holy he was. He was telling Dad so Dad could do something to keep them from destroying themselves. And then he overcame the temptation that all of us face to contend. I mean, if I were in Joseph's place, when I was 17 years old, if my brothers had sold me, I'd be probably just getting out of prison. But Joseph overcame that temptation. Then the biggest thing, he didn't complain. He had already conquered these things before he was 17 years old. Most of us complain at the most ridiculous things. Sitting in traffic, what are you, brain dead? Where did you get your license? Sears Roebuck, etc. We have all of these thoughts for people because we are temporarily inconvenienced, but yet we find Joseph modeled or things early on in his life, he had genuinely the fear of God and a knowledge of God that was way beyond what would have been the norm for a child at that age.
Our listeners this morning are people just like us in many ways, and they may be wondering, okay, this is good for Joseph, young man that God chose for a worldwide position of influence, but God hasn't chosen me for that. My life is very different. But honestly, as I've been listening to you, thinking about my own life, we all face these temptations in different ways. What are some of the temptations that really show up in our lives here and now that we need to be preparing to overcome, like Joseph did?
Well, when you look at the fact that he had conviction before he faced a crisis, we have to know why we believe what we believe and what we believe before we get to that point of crisis. I remember a good friend of mine, Elman Dark, who had played pro baseball for many years, managed for many years, has 5 World Series rings. He said how they used to get ready for World Series games. They started in spring training. And he said, we practiced the right thing so often in the non-pressure that when the pressure came, we automatically did the right thing. Mm. So if you're a businessman today and you are facing a business decision, your temptation today perhaps will be, do I lie and get the contract, or am I honest and not make the sale? Maybe you're a building contractor. You say, yeah, we can start, if you sign you, we can probably start a week from Monday, knowing full well you can't get there for 2 months. Hmm. We have to know what we believe, and we have to have integrity before we ever get started. When a person gets to work or gets on his internet, he has to have a conviction before he sits down at that screen. I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. It could be a mother at home facing the temptation of depression, focusing on the situations of life rather than on the grace of God and the provision of strength that he gives. For a teenager, it may be some other, it may be a peer pressure thing. Offer of alcohol. I mean, do I say no or do I say yes? Hmm. I have to know what I believe, and I can't just answer it, well, my church doesn't believe in that.
These are things we face in the real world, and that's why our program, The Word for Life, is designed to meet those real-world needs. Doc, wrap up for us this morning with a word of encouragement, maybe to some of our listeners who may be thinking, you know, I can relate to those temptations. In fact, I face them every day, and I haven't always dealt with it successfully.
Well, I think like Joseph, he kept his gaze on God. We cannot look at circumstances around us. Circumstances don't make us what we are. They reveal what we are.